Have you ever wanted to play the perfect tabletop game, where story beats run smoothly, and there's no awkward pauses between dice rolls? Yeah, me too. But since that's impossible, I did the next best thing, and novelized my Witcher tabletop game to showcase the story in its cleanest form. The result is this podcast. I'm Jacob Gerstel, and this is Tales from the Witcher. Part audiobook, part actual play, part serialized adventure, and a whole new way to vicariously enjoy tabletop games. Welcome to the world of The Witcher, where monsters roam freely and the continent is once again at war. If you were hoping to follow the plight of Geralt of Rivia, however, I'm not going to be doing that. Instead, I offer you the story of a not-so-merry band of degenerates who are making their way across the continent. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. The Last Moment. 13. Tobek took several deep breaths. He tried not to focus on the Anopheles' sharpened, proboscis-like noses that jutted from their faces to suck blood like mosquitoes. He tried not to focus on their transparent, stubby wings that occasionally fluttered as the wiry humanoids lifted off the ground for a few seconds at a time. Tried not to focus on their kneecaps that bent inward, or their swollen bellies, or their eyeless faces, or their lengthened and clawed fingers, or the way they blindly and aimlessly and languidly bumped against the stone walls of the mine. Tobek tried not to focus on these things because he would soon be in the mind of an Anopheles, and the less he thought about the creature he was possessing, the better. He needed a clear head in order to make the connection. "Why am I here?" Tobek found himself thinking. "I don't need the money, and I care little for this stone. So why did I come along?" The answer, he knew, was Yana. She may only be using him to retrieve the Mars Stone, but he hoped she would return the favor later, because Tobek would need all the help he could get if he was to continue his search for the Wild Hunt. His companions had spread out over the two wooden bridges that extended over the crevice. Six Anopheles buzzed and wandered on the other side. They would not be able to cross the bridges without being noticed, Zevo told them. The Witcher added that under no circumstances were they to strike at their distended bellies. The Anopheles had fed recently, and any puncture might spew acidic bile everywhere. Tobek, fool that he was, volunteered to make the first move. He sat cross-legged against a rock wall and took a deep breath. His body would be as limp as a ragdoll once he completed the spell, and it would do no good to crumple to the ground and slam his head on the stone floor. Tobek narrowed his gaze to the closest Anopheles across the bridge, who strode around with the gait of one who had just accomplished a great feat. "What if this is the one I don't return from?" Tobek thought moments before preparing the spell. "What if I'm to spend the rest of my days as a bloodsucker in an abandoned mine? Will my life have been worth it? Will I have done what I was meant to do?" Tobek had his answer after a moment's consideration. No. He stifled a laugh and pushed his mind out of his own body. As usual, there was a sucking sensation in his head, like a hard-boiled egg squeezing through the mouth of a bottle. Then pure and complete darkness enveloped Tobek's consciousness, the kind of emptiness that would drive a person mad if they lingered too long. 5 seconds in the void, grasping for any nearby consciousness like roots spreading underground, was enough for Tobek. Any longer, and he would never come back. A thin tendril of thought caught hold of another life. Tobek's consciousness shouted with joy, but, of course, nothing was heard in the void. The void is a vacuum. The consciousness was easy to probe, and didn't appear to have any more intelligence than a dim-witted human. Tobek sent more tendrils to worm its way inside. There was little resistance. A second sucking sensation followed, and Tobek knew he had overtaken an Anopheles mind. What followed was darkness. Not an empty darkness like the void, but more a mundane darkness, the kind one sees when they close their eyes at night. "Anopheles have no eyes," Tobek thought, and chuckled again. It came out as a low buzz, and the dissonance gave Tobek temporary vertigo. With a lack of sight came sharpened hearing, however. Tobek could hear every shift and weight nearby, and the rushing water at the bottom of the crevice took on a new, booming quality. All these sensations came at once, but they were nothing compared to the creature's thoughts and feelings, which fought back for control. Tobek noticed a sense of fullness, as if he had engorged himself. With this fullness came a slowness of thought and drowsiness. Tobek's own mind fought too, wanting to focus on little more than how satisfied it felt, and how fine it was to simply move with the energy that came from having a full meal. Tabek found the sentiment as warm and comforting as a blanket, but knew he could not lose sight of his own thoughts. If he did, he might never be able to return to his own body. Tabek remembered what his mentor Zhu had taught him. He grounded himself by thinking of his family in Nilfgaard, his aristocratic parents who were still rotting in a prison for treason, his older sister who had died years ago, and his younger sister who was more aloof than Tabek. These were the people that shaped his youth. They were not necessarily pleasant associations, though there were some, his older sister's touch of romanticism, for instance, but they were wholly Tabek's. They helped him regain control. After a moment of resituating, he sensed where the other Anifeli were through sound alone. He turned towards the closest one. A rush of air filled Tabek's ears as he extended the creature's claws. The claw sunk into soft flesh, pliable as cottage cheese. A buzzing shriek. A pop. Hot liquid splashed onto his claws and chest. An acidic sizzle. An acrid burn. The tingle of burning flesh gripped Tabek's mind, too hot to properly register, as if he was doused in fire. Creaking and popping wood to the right. Ropes snapped and untwined. Tabek heard and felt it all in the probing darkness, and all that came next. Zevo shouted. Footfalls across a creaking bridge up ahead. A growl and buzz. A whoosh of air. A heavy thud on the ground. Ethramel muttered an elder speech. A suction of air rushed past, as if a void had opened. The pops and cracks of a fire. Two more shrieks to the left. The smell of already rotting meat roasting. Clack, clack, clack across the bridge up ahead. Jeremiah grunted. The twang of a crossbow bolt, followed by two more in rapid succession. Rushing air. Thrice crunching bone. A ghastly shriek. Another pop. The acrid smell of vomit. A sizzle. Zevo cursed. Creaking and popping wood, ahead and to the right. Old ropes unraveling. A rush of air up ahead. Tabek pushed back on the languid feeling that fought his mind, and forced himself to gag. He evacuated the contents of his stomach, and acidic bile shot through his mouth in a projectile stream. That feeling of fullness passed instantly, and Tabek felt his stomach shrivel to the size of a wrinkled pea. He was unsure if he hit his mark, as the only thing occupying his mind, expanding as rapidly as poisonous gas, was hunger. Primordial, driving hunger. Hunger that sapped all other will and strength. Hunger that made one irritable. Hunger that... Footfalls up ahead. A whoosh of air. A heavy thud on the ground. Snapping rope and crackling wood to the right and up ahead. It all sounded faint and far away. Hunger muffled everything. Gods, he was hungry. Tabek! This was his last moment. Act or be consumed. Move or die. All things hung on the axis. Tabek could not see past it. He pushed. It took all his might. He moved slowly, with sapped strength and ravenous hunger. He moved towards the loudest sound, the river deep beneath the crevice. Tabek, we have to move. Now. Do not kill this creature, Tabek thought. He felt the sensation of gritted teeth. It will feed chaos. Untether yourself now. Let it fly away, let it... Hunger flared, and Tabek lost all sense of thought. It consumed him, though the creature continued walking towards the ever-growing rush of water. Perhaps there was food down there. If he could just have a spot of blood to tamp the pangs, he could. A slip and a rush of wind. The sensation of falling. The river grew louder. Untether, goddamn you! Tabek roared through the muffle of hunger. Blankness. And Tabek's sight returned. Color exploded around him. Sound retreated like crashing waves and returned to normal, or what Tabek thought was normal. He was uncertain. He was still so hungry. Tabek was leaning against a rock. His companions, save for Ethramel, were on the other side of the crevice. Carmagnola was shouting and waving for them to hurry and cross. Tabek didn't understand the rush. He glanced around and saw that the Anifeli were dead, some beheaded and others a shriveled husk, as if exploded from the inside. The last Anifeli, the one he possessed, well, it was likely dashed against the rocks and washed away by the river. Tabek regretted that. He should have been able to save the creature. It no longer posed a threat, and by ending its life, he only added to the burgeoning chaos of the world. Still, all the Anifeli were dead, so where was the danger? Tabek then saw the danger. The leftmost bridge, the one closest to Tabek and Ethramel, had snapped and was clattering against the stone crevice. The ropes looked burned, the wooden slats partially dissolved and splintered. There would be no crossing that way. The rightmost bridge, then. Tabek now understood the urgency. Acidic bile, the same that provided Tabek that sense of hunger and emptiness so shortly after rejecting it, was eating its way through the hand ropes and the wood. Tabek was unsure how much longer the bridge would hold, or if it would even support his weight. Tabek tried to stand up and felt weakness course through his body. He felt hungry, and the sense of fatigue that came with that. His body collapsed against the rock. He gritted his teeth and pushed himself up. He wobbled on his feet and steadied himself against the stone, but he was up.
"Hurry, you whoresons!"
shouted Jeremiah. Ethramel bolted across the bridge. It buckled and wobbled beneath his weight, and one of the wooden slats snapped as he pressed on it. He scrambled to keep his balance, and some of the bile was kicked up and landed on his calf. The sorcerer howled, but continued across the bridge. He made it to the other end and hopped on one foot as he quickly wiped the acid off his pant leg. Tabek pushed all thoughts of hunger from his mind and focused his will, just as Zu had taught him. But Zu was never as hungry as this, Tabek thought slowly. How could he possibly know? He took a few wobbly steps, and his legs didn't collapse from under him. He had little time left. Tabek gathered what remaining strength he had and sprinted across the bridge. He was afraid it would snap on his first step, but it held. Even as the bridge dissolved all around him, it held. Tabek made it to the other end before his legs gave out and the bridge snapped and clattered into the river below, just like that poor Anafeli he was unable to save. Tabek lied there for a moment, face in the dusty ground, collecting his breath. Tears ran down his cheeks, but he was certain no one could see them in the darkness. Tabek's stomach growled long and low. "I think," Tabek thought, "I may need some help." 14. "You need to repair my armor," Zevor growled to Jeremiah. He lifted his tattered dwarven cloak and wiggled a finger through a coin-sized hole. He pushed the cloak back to reveal steel armor underneath. Charred corrosion pocked the breastplate and hauberk. "Look at all the damage your contraption did."
"Technically, it was the Anafeli's bile that did that," Jeremiah retorted.
He hefted the heavy crossbow in his hands.
"It's not my fault the monster exploded."
"It is your fault. I specifically told you not to puncture an Anafeli's stomach."
"You also destroyed the bridge," Carmagnola added.
He saw Jeremiah fire three bolts in rapid succession at an Anafeli. Each bolt pierced its bloated stomach. The monster burst and doused Zevo and the bridge in acidic bile.
"That was our only way back."
Jeremiah waved the comment away.
"We'll find a way out of here."
"We bloody well better."
Ethramel pulled up his pants, which were seared at the cuff. He revealed a shiny new burn scar on his ankle.
"Half my body is already burned. I don't need to be adding any more. And you owe me a new pair of pants, craftsman.
And then you'll repair my armor. For free."
"Yes, yes. These are small prices to pay to see that my newest invention works."
Carmagnola eyed Jeremiah's crossbow again. It looked like an ordinary crossbow to him, save for the wooden box attached at the top. But ordinary crossbows don't fire three bolts without having to be reloaded.
"Just what is your newest invention?"
Carmagnola asked.
"I call it a repeating crossbow,"
Jeremiah said in a wistful tone.
"With a few more tweaks, it should... well, never you mind."
They fell silent as they followed the single path further into the mine. To find a magic stone, Carmagnola thought. It sounded like one of the fairy tales that old sorcerer Vedard would tell him when he was a kid. They trekked forward. The path was narrow and winding, and deathly quiet. Zevo stepped closer to Ethramel. He sighed and cleared his throat.
"You're over 100 years old. Have you ever had thoughts about settling down?"
"Frequently. Then the Lord breaks down his daughter's door and I have to make a hasty escape."
Ethramel rolled his eyes.
"It's hard to settle when everyone's trying to kill you."
"But have you thought about it?"
"Yes, everyone has.
There was a time when I would have liked a family of my own. A son to watch grow. But that never seemed to pan out."
Carmagnola couldn't help but grin.
"Do my ears deceive me, or is our witcher thinking of giving up the path and settling down?"
"Your ears deceive you," Zevo said quickly.
"Pity,"
the doctor said,
"because there's plenty of advantages to settling down. Stability, friends, community, a sense of purpose, family. It's hard to imagine a long life without these things."
"And what would you know about it?" Ethramel asked. "You're a wanderer, same as the rest of us, no matter what your fake new nobility and kingdoms say."
That was true.
Carmagnola spent his childhood in Sidaris and his teenage years studying at Oxenford Academy. But beyond that, he had spent most of his life on the road.
"I briefly lived with Beatrix," he said. "Is that the girl you cursed?"
Jeremiah asked. "He didn't curse her."
"And it's a hex," Ethramel added. "Yes, the same woman. We had a year or so of stability. Well, as much stability as could come from hunting monsters. But still, it was nice."
Carmagnola let the statement linger in his head, and found it was true. That time with Beatrix, as tempestuous as it was among the happiest of his life. So why did he leave her all those years ago? It was difficult to remember now, outside of the obvious danger that came with killing monsters. He was sure he had a good reason for it, though. Maybe it could have worked, he thought. If I stuck around, maybe. Carmagnola shook his head. No sense in dwelling on the failings of the past. "How about you, Jeremiah?" Zevo asked. "Have you thought of settling down?"
"I did settle down, for a time. Had a home and a generous patronage under Duke Haggard. But I wasn't satisfied with it. I felt it was holding me back from greater things. So I struck off on my own. And here I am."
Zevo grunted. "And you, Tabek?" Tabek was trailing the group. His face took on an ashy complexion, and looked to be deep in thought. He looked up when Zevo had said his name and blinked. "Huh? What? Have you ever thought about settling down?" "Oh, no. What's there to settle down to?" "Wiser words have never been spoken, I think," Ethramel said with a chuckle. "Perhaps what you should do, Witcher, is..." "Quiet," Zevo whispered. He motioned for everyone to stop. The light grew brighter ahead, and it looked as though the path led to another room. "Someone's talking in there. Move slowly." They did as the Witcher asked. Pressed against the wall, they found themselves at the mouth of a plateau that looked down into a large, circular room. There was a distinct lack of mining equipment in this room, Carmagnola noticed. But there was a small wooden hovel on the far end, and several wooden tables with dirty beakers and graduated cylinders. The room had a musty smell, and Carmagnola had mixed enough medicine to know that the laboratory equipment was not being used for its intended purpose. They had stumbled into a Fistech lab. Carmagnola scowled. He had never tried the stuff himself, but he had seen enough people snorting the powerfully addictive narcotic to see what it did to them. And he never liked what he saw. Not one bit. "And the plowing nobles were using it at the feast," Carmagnola thought. "The damn stuff's everywhere these days." He glanced to the middle of the room and stifled a gasp. 5 bodies, 4 dwarves and 1 gnome, were strewn about in a large puddle of blood. And standing around the bodies were 4 living folks. 3 dwarves and 1... The last creature looked humanoid, stood on 2 legs and wore mail armor, but its head was that of a lynx, with an elongated snout and cat-like ears. Fur covered its arms and legs, and it had paws instead of feet.
"Someone got here before us."
Carmagnola stifled another gasp when he heard the lynx speak, quite well in fact.
"Who the hell else would have heard about the meeting?"
The lynx's 3 dwarven companions were silent.
"What is that creature?"
Carmagnola whispered to the Witcher. "A werebub, one of the elder races. Now quiet." The lynx, or werebub rather, looked around the room. Carmagnola pressed himself against the wall a little more, praying the creature didn't see him.
"And no sign of the stone, you say?"
The werebub's dwarven companions were again silent.
"Plow it," the werebub snarled. "Vidmar's not going to be happy. She wants that stone, which means it's on me if I don't deliver. You understand that, yes? Of course you don't. You're all empty-headed thugs. Let's go, before those Anafeli wander back."
The werebub led the dwarves to the opposite end of the room, through a small corridor Carmagnola would have missed if he didn't know where to look. They all waited a few minutes before Zevo took the first cautious step onto the plateau.
"And here I thought werebubs were extinct," Ethramel said. "Gone the way of the Vran. Memories of a bygone age."
"The Vran aren't extinct either," Zevo said, walking down the wooden steps to inspect the bodies. "There's just not many of either left."
"What in the plowing hell are Vran?"
Carmagnola asked Jeremiah. The craftsman shrugged and followed. They took their time inspecting the rooms and the bodies. Carmagnola picked up a few of the beakers and saw white residue crusted at the bottom, confirming his suspicion.
"Looks like our friends were making Fistech," he said aloud.
"Is any of it salvageable?" Ethramel asked.
"No."
"Pity.
I see tracks leading out that way."
Zevo pointed to where the werebub and dwarves exited. He then pointed to the path they just came from, on the opposite end of the room.
and they likely came in that way. Two sets. Small footprints. Gnomish or halfling. Ethermel turned one of the waxy-skinned dwarves over with his foot. These poor Fistek producers were stabbed several times each. You're saying two people did this? That's what the tracks say. Jeremiah cracked his neck.
So some Fistek dealers run across a magic stone in the mine they're working. They're looking to sell it, but were killed before they could.
Requires some extrapolating, Carmagnola said.
But it seems that way, yes.
Then we have to find their killers, Jeremiah said.
Zevo grunted. It'll be hard with just tracks.
Give me a moment. Tarbeck stumbled towards the bodies and collapsed onto his knees. He dipped a finger in the congealing pool of blood.
I may be able to get a vision.
He popped his finger into his mouth before anyone could protest. Tarbeck collapsed onto the ground and began to convulse.
Seizure, Carmagnola thought as he rushed over.
He knelt and propped Tarbeck's head up. His eyes were rolled back in his head, but his breathing was steady. Carmagnola pulled out his dagger and placed the handle between Tarbeck's teeth to keep him from swallowing his own tongue.
Give him a moment, Zevo calmly said.
What?
He's done this before. Just give him a moment.
Tarbeck's eyes shot open and he sat bolt upright. Carmagnola's dagger fell from his gasping mouth and clattered onto the ground. Tarbeck's skin looked even ashier than before, and his eyes were wide and bloodshot. He gripped the sides of his head and muttered,
I'm hungry.
What?
The doctor said. Tarbeck looked to Carmagnola, then to the rest of his companions. He said,
I know where to find our assassins.
That'll do it for this episode of Tales from the Witcher. This podcast is written and produced by Jacob Gerstel. The Witcher novels are by Andrzej Sapkowski, The Witcher games are by CD Projekt Red, and The Witcher tabletop RPG is by R. Talsorian Games. The music is by Eric Matias at soundimage.org. Be sure to leave a rating and a review, and to spread the word of this podcast far and wide. You can follow the podcast at TalesWitcherPod on X, or at talesfromthewitcher.buzzsprout.com. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you again next week.